Today, I'm going to take some time. I'm visiting with Chad Bain, Representative Chad Bain. Our first chance to get to visit with you, Chad. Thanks for taking time to visit.
Yeah, it's great to be able to come on and kind of get people updated and kind of get my thoughts out there. It'll be therapeutic in a way a little bit. Down at the State House, you get bottled up with a lot of stuff, so I'm glad to take this opportunity to kind of get some of this stuff out there.
All right. Well, first, this is our first visit since the session started because you've been back and forth doing a lot of different things. Got some pretty good committee appointments. I know right in the areas you like ag, right in particular. Got that. But the different committees and things you're serving on, keeping you pretty busy?
Yes, they sure are. A lot of these things were heavy up front trying to get through funnel week. So ag, education, and transportation were hit up on the front side here. Once we got past funnel week, things kind of switched over to ways and means, and now ways and means is kind of our heavy hitter right now as we go. And that's kind of the meat and potatoes of kind of why I wanted to go down there. So ag obviously is near and dear. That education, I was a little fish out of water a little bit, but it was good to kind of learn some of the educational things. And same thing with transportation. That's a nonpartisan committee that you get a kind of the opportunity to work with both sides, so that's kind of fun and unique in its own way. So it's been a learning curve, kind of get caught up on things and try and understand the history and kind of the genesis of the bills is probably the hard part. If I get presented with a bill and read through it and read through the explanation, you kind of get the gist of it and understand it in a way. But rewinding amongst the earlier predecessors that worked on those things and trying to get what they were thinking of and why they were trying to attack it and where they were going with it, that's the stuff that's kind of hard to do. And the lobbyists do a good job of kind of bringing you up to speed on the history of it and where it's been and where it's going now. So it's worked well, but that's clearly been the toughest part is to kind of get the history of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's and again, you're just coming in there, and the House is always the busy one. You've got just a lot of different people doing a lot of different bills and things.
We have a lot of fun with the Senate, going back and forth, almost that Army-Navy thing. We do have quite a bit more bills that go through, and we approach things a little bit different from our side. And quite frankly, some of it, we have too many. So the Senate probably has their own complaints with the House sending over 1,000 bills, way too many bills. So it's kind of a back and forth fun thing where we all end up on the same team, but there's things that are done differently between the two.
And I know one thing you had told me is that when you guys caucus in, you guys caucus a lot in the House.
Yeah, Dad being down in the Senate and kind of understanding and seeing it through those eyes, and I didn't follow it perfectly close. I was not there job shadowing him or anything like that, but I got some of the gist of it. But when the House caucus fires up, we've been there multiple times this week, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours in a chair, and we'll take breaks, but that's a little bit different than the way Senate runs things. Mm-hmm. And again, educationally, I like that, and embedding different ideas and thought processes within the caucus, I really, really enjoy. More time-consuming, but you get a little bit more familiar with some of the bills that you probably wouldn't otherwise. So sure. You're doing a lot of learning while you're in there, and sometimes discussions go on, and you can kind of see people like, okay, we've got enough on that one. But in the end, it's really fun to hear kind of some of the different lines or avenues that people's minds are thinking on some of these bills. And they get in those caucuses, I'll admit, I've got my own set of values, and I've got that algorithm that I use to come up with my ideas. And you get in those caucuses and you start hearing some of those things, and you're like, uh-oh. Where are we going here? And we want to make sure that we're doing it right. But they're vetted, you know, in that process, they get vetted, I think, very, very well. And you get a lot of different scenarios thrown out. And I think it's very good. So,
well, and one thing we do want to point out is when you went down there, obviously you hire, you get a person to be you're basically your administrative assistant that's helping you there. You got a good one.
Yes. Talon McCormick, she has done absolutely fantastic. It's kind of been neat to watch her lead some of the other clerks. She's been down there on both House and Senate side, and we laugh at some of the differences. And then some of the predecessors and how they worked and what she did. But she's brought a wealth of experience that has been absolutely fantastic, and it's been fun to watch her work because, in a way, it's fun to admire because when she was gone for a little bit over the honeymoon process, she was gone for a week, and the other clerks all came up and were like, oh, we really miss her, and we like what she does, and she leads us, and she's always one we can turn to. So it was fun, and also the respect level she gets when she was gone, the other people that were willing to help while she was gone, it was kind of a neat procedure to see. So I got lucky with that one, and we work well together, and hopefully it works well for a while.
Well, I remember, when she first went down there the first time with Representative Baltimore is when she first did that. So she's been there for a while helping out.
Yeah, but I get some good stories from her, too. So that's
let's talk a little bit about some of the things that have been going on. A lot, like we said, a lot of bills come out of the House. And this week, another one, and I know you've been watching this, and we've talked about this previously, even when you were a candidate, but eminent domain use, abuse. Again, there's the challenge, and the big thing is, obviously, the pipeline, Summit Carbon Solutions, and like for Boone County, your district, really, it's a small area. But I think you've probably got three property owners that are involved with it here in Boone County. But it is one of those things. A lot of people have a lot of feelings about this. And Carter Nordholm on the west of us here, he's got his own fair share of people that are involved with it, too. So this is something you've had. This is one of those things where, which one are we looking at? You had about five different things. I remember Representative Grassley say, well, we'll work our way through these and see which ones make it over to the Senate side. And the Senate hasn't been overly receptive with them. Let's just put it that way.
Well, yeah, there's obviously a difference in opinion on this one in between the House and the Senate. And it's been, again, kind of the lines that people take on it. Eminent domain in and of itself and the way the IUC enacted their ruling. So you've got a couple of different layers there that come along and bring this issue up. The carbon pipeline itself, I'm against. I think it's a false premise, and I don't think we need to capture that those emissions. And then exactly what happened, how the process of getting it from here up to North Dakota and the dangers involved in that. Carbon pipelines haven't been around populated areas much, and so there is, there's a huge learning curve that's going to go along if something like that goes in, and then there's dangers included in that. And then the false premise, in my opinion, of capturing that, putting it underground, and you get some kind of different people, different thoughts on what it's going to do under the ground and whether it'll fixate to the rocks and go back in. So, you got to kind of, there's some juxtaposed positions to that, and you got to kind of believe some stuff and go out on a limb. But bottom line is, I was not in favor of it. Eminent domain is a way to kind of shut that thing down. South Dakota took a strong stance on it and kind of made it a moot point. I think we're coming in here and making sure that we finish it off in a way on the House side. Whether the Senate picks it up or not, that'll be up to them. But South Dakota had such a defiant in their election process. There was 13 or 14 members that got primaried and kind of kicked out over the issue. And so they ended up kind of fixing that issue, so we didn't have to battle quite as hard. The IUC in their ruling, if it's not allowed in South Dakota, it became kind of a little bit of a moot point. But there were a couple of different problems I had. The IUC, the way that they classified it, was I had a big issue with the carbon, the capturing of carbon, and then just kind of the way the whole federal government is set up and the way that they have kickbacks associated with capturing carbon. And that whole thing is just not something that I support. So as we come through and individually make it harder through eminent domain and pipeline insurance and some different bills that are going to come through the House here, it's kind of a catch-all that we can make sure that something like that doesn't come through here. So eminent domain is one way to attack it. But again, the whole premise, I think, is bad. So I was not in favor of that pipeline coming through. And when it came to ethanol and the price support for grain, I felt conflicted through the farming side. I'm just hoping that we can approach it in a different way, and that with President Trump in there, 45Z and the regulations that will come along with it will kind of change their avenues and be lifted. He's not huge into that carbon stuff anyway, and so I think we'll get into jet fuel just in a different avenue. And one of my biggest complaints through this process was I do believe that there were some people that were swayed on this issue because of jet fuel and some of the tax credits involved for mm-hmm. the ethanol companies. And I believe that was, again, a false premise. To get into jet fuel, there were more than just capturing this carbon, and you had to meet a 50% threshold of cover crop and some other things that I don't think we were going to get to anyway. So the whole thing wasn't good. I'm glad to kind of kill it off, and if we can add some layers along there to give protection, I'm glad to see it go.
Well, it's one of those where, again, the initial idea was we're going to get the credits. That's going to lower it, make it more usable for places like California and stuff like that. Again, that's just, we're guessing that's how the whole process would have worked. And again, it's like you said, there's a lot of challenges, a lot of thoughts, different sides of it too, especially when you're using it to enhance your renewable fuels.
Yeah, and that's definitely the pull is ethanol was. We talked to a lot of ethanol people, and they're like, hey, we need to get into jet fuel. And so it was an avenue towards that, as they saw. But they're guessing just as well along with us, and they know they've been out to Washington, and they're frustrated at some of the government things. And any time through this carbon sequestration that you make profitability because of the tax credits that you get and or, you know, if you're going to net $5 million a year and all of a sudden you're going to get a bump of 20 through a carbon credit, that's not the profitability model that we want. We want business to be profitable. We want you to be profitable because of your good decisions, hiring the right people, running the plants right, buying stuff at the right price, and being efficient. I don't want it because California says that we're going to give you $20 million to put in a solar panel and get bumped up in the carbon scoring. So that stuff, just from a business stance, didn't make sense to me. And that whole model, obviously, we would have had to have accepted it if it was our only option. But I'm glad President Trump got elected and that we can go a different route, I'm hoping.
All right. Well, we'll, again, move on from that. But I wanted to stay on ag for a second because I know part of the things that you're looking at. We just recently had another grain handler go into bankruptcy, and obviously when you get into the indemnity part of it, those are things I know you guys have to look at. You've got some producers, I'm pretty sure, that are saying we need to take a look at what's happening here, and again, not a simple thing to resolve, but you got some work to do on that.
Yeah, and the grain indemnity fund needed to be updated, and so I think over the last couple of years it's a topic that they haven't been able to square away on, and it's something I really feel passionate about that we need to finalize and get done. And so there'll have to be some sort of a compromise between the House and the Senate when it comes to this. I do believe the two sides will come together on it, and I'll push as hard as I can to get that done. Kind of the big breakdown to FF and get right to it is the deferred payment. So if you take your grain into the elevator and you sell it, but you defer your payment till after the first of the year for tax purposes, they're really questioning whether that ought to be covered under this indemnity fund. And then the percentage of the payout is another, whether it covers you at the 90% level or the 70% level. And so the Senate side wants that deferred piece put in there. The House side does not. I'm kind of torn on that decision. Ultimately, I think something needs to be done, and something's better than nothing. But I would like to work hard to get deferred payments in there. I don't believe that it's going to make the price go up for the insurance as much as what people think. Right now, we're going to bump that fund up to approximately $16 million. And I believe if you put deferred payments in there, you might be up into the $18, $19 million range. So there will be a little bit more that needs to be collected, hopefully not at a higher price, just a longer time period to fund that. And we got to be careful not to make that fund too big. But ultimately, I think once you've taken your grain to the elevator and you've signed some sort of contract that says, here you go, if the elevator goes under, it would be hard for me not to want to protect that grain if an elevator goes under in between when you get your check and when you've dropped your grain off. So my philosophical approach is just, hey, if you take the grain there and you're waiting to get paid, in my opinion, you ought to be covered under that thing. And Indiana and Illinois, the three big states, do it, which is a huge portion of the grain across the belt, and I think it's something that we'll work for. However, I don't want it to blow up and
and not get anything at all. So we'll have that fight. We'll wrestle about it in between the House and the Senate, and we'll see what we come up with.
This is just one of those mostly, and again, I'm guessing most of the producers tell you, yeah, this is old info. We need new updated, and you know, we need to take a look at where we're at right now in our situation. Let's talk a little bit about property taxes, because the House is generating the discussions. Again, put out actually an idea, and let's just call it significant reform, shall we? They're taking a look at it, but I know when they first put it out, it was right before funnel. One of the things was, let's take a look at it, see what's happening, and then we'll start talking and see what, because everybody's got a lot of ideas.
Yeah, property tax to me is a local issue, particularly coming from the supervisor side, and so I'm really touchy about that local issue. I know that's a term people like to throw around, but local elections matter. I want them to continue to matter. You really need to put the set of supervisors in there, city officials, anyone that is in charge of taxing authorities across your county, you need to be really, really in tune with and take care of. So I want to be very protective of those guys. As a supervisor, when I was from there looking up at the state, I was like, hey, but out of our business, we're handling it. We've got the supervisors we want in there. That's what elections matter. And so what are you doing butting in? And then you've got other counties that are not as responsible or running property taxes up, and people are saying, hey, so you've got a balance in there. And so when you come out with a statewide law, you've got people who are being fiscal responsible and people who are not. And that's not party affiliation. It's just point in fact. So when you see that, hey, now we got to create something that's going to give property tax relief across such a huge swath of supervisors, you know, city elected officials, sure, and different entities.
School
and
board members, yeah.
Some are property rich, some are not. So you've got such a mix match that I don't like getting involved, because I can't possibly know. We have trouble keeping enough of our own budget and keeping a track of what we're doing ourselves, let alone 100 counties with thousands of different taxing authorities across the state. So in this proposal, probably the big thing are the rollbacks, getting rid of those, resetting those. Those have been around since the 70s, and there'll be some issues that we need to work through and get feedback from our local officials on that. But the rollbacks will be a big thing. And whatever savings, the $400+ million savings that are proposed in here, hopefully most of them are through tax credits and not really limiting taxing authority, but $400+ million in savings, and then cutting that levy, that 540 levy, down to 297 in the schools, I think we'll get direct property tax relief. The last time they tried to tax property tax relief down there, what ended up happening was some was passed on through mental health and some was not. And so the state kind of felt like, hey, we did something to reduce property taxes and the local authorities didn't go along with it. So it was kind of one of those deals. We got to find a place that if we really, truly want to impact property tax relief, we got to stick it in a place where there's limited spending through the schools. They have a fixed amount they can spend. So it'll also create transparency, and I think the big caveat or the big worry is for the people that have been responsible. Boone County is one of them, that have been responsible. We're going to have to be careful not to cut off their levying authority to the point where it really puts them into a pinch. And so, unfortunately, because they've been so responsible, they might be one of the counties. In the long run, getting rid of the rollbacks, I do believe, will help some of the smaller counties like us. So I do believe kind of the end goal will be good for Boone County. But just kind of getting, as you go through getting rid of those rollback processes and kind of going through that, there could be some growing pains, but I do think in the end it'll be good for Boone County.
Yeah, I don't. One of the things that, and you were aware of it when you were a supervisor doing mental health related things, how Boone County, we were much more frugal, shall I say. We had the funds to provide the services, but nothing like compared to some of the neighboring counties.
Right. So. Yeah, and that's what makes it tough coming in and doing any taxing or property tax stuff, because of what you just said. You've got such varying approaches of each counties and each cities to their taxing authorities that, man, you find yourself in a tricky position. There's not one there's not one city council member that I've talked to that does not have a very unique story of, about roads or about something or whatever they need to do that impacts their budget. And I'm like, wow, how are we ever going to get involved in such intimate, you know, budget talks with that many taxing authorities? So again, I like to leave it to local control. I do recognize that getting rid of the rollbacks, I think ultimately will give them more consistency. They'll be able to get to it quicker and understand what exactly their budget is earlier, and some predictability inside their budget. So I think it's huge to get rid of the rollbacks. I just want to make sure we can get from point A to point B without causing any problems. And I'm going to talk to the local supervisors again. Because they've been so responsible, I believe they're going to be put in a little bit of a unique position, and I'm going to have to sell this a little bit harder to them. But if they ever get put, if they ever have to switch to a different levy or get put in front of a crowd through these transparency stuff, I would take the opportunity, the unique opportunity, to say, hey, because we've been so responsible and other counties have not, we're being punished a little bit. And in order to equalize this and get to the future, get to point B, We have to change the way we look at this just for a little bit. But here's ITR. Here's all these statistical, you know, we're the lowest taxing levy in the state. We've been responsible. And it might give them an opportunity to sell how well that they've done over the past 10 years or so for keeping their levy so low, and give them an opportunity to seek transparency and find out who's been the higher taxing authority over their own properties, and kind of dive into some of that stuff. So I think it'd be a unique learning opportunity for property tax owners to take a look at, and I'm hoping the supervisors will get that opportunity if they got to dive into a different levy to meet the needs of the county, that they can sell how responsible they've been.
Sure. Let's quickly, just before I run out of time here, supplemental state aid. Difference between the House and Senate? Are we going to get something worked out?
That's a great question. I don't know. Okay. The predictability down here of what we can and can't get done, and when the two sides meet, because of the different avenues and the way this stuff is going, I was laughing. We sit down and caucus and kind of get an over-under on how long it's going to be. And all think it'll be an hour, and then 4 hours later, we're getting out of our chairs. So right now, I'm staying away from any predictability on some of that stuff, because I just, quite frankly, don't know exactly where it's going to go.
It will happen. It's just exactly what it's going to come out looking like, yeah.
Yeah, we have our proposal, they have theirs, and you don't want to throw either the House or the Senate, whichever side you're opposing of, under the bus, and we're still in strict negotiations on that.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to save some of that stuff for where we end up, and you know, we're trying as hard as we can, and we have in our own caucus, you've got your own set of ideas even inside of our own House, so we're battling with that. That's all primo going along, and we've made our offer to them, and where this thing ends up, I can't predict.
Yeah. Finally, I know you've had some company come down to visit. People stop by and visit. Again, they should let you know in advance. So, again, if you're not caucusing, you can have a chance to get out there and visit with people.
Yep, I love when people come down. It's great. Everyone has been awesome that has come down. And even the people that you disagree with, or if they come down and give their issues, it gives you time to talk and let you know, get a one-to-one on where you think you're at, where they're at, why they're at, and why you're where you're at. And so it works really, really well, and everyone has been super understanding, and it's been, that part has been extremely fun to get out and see people and have people come down. So I love visitors when they come down.
All righty. Hey, I appreciate you taking time visiting with us this week, letting us know what's happening, and we look forward to making more contact with you and keeping updated as we head towards the end of the session. I know we've got a lot of things yet to do and a lot of budget work yet to get done.
Yeah, this is not looking like it's going to be a short session, so hopefully we can get after it and kind of this back third here. Make up some ground on getting out of here on time. But either way, we got to stay until we get things done, and we'll do the best we can do.
All righty. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having me.